Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 294 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I am happy to finish my Siempre Positivo Infinity Gauntlet with the third member of the trio. It's Tony Juanmartí, also a journalist for Diario Sport. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Good evening here in Barcelona. It's the evening, and nice to meet you here, yes, in this podcast.
So now some may say, Dan, why would you have on your competition and promote Siempre Positivo? But to them, I say that show is made up of three credentialed, successful journalists who tweet from the Camp Nou and have multiple sources within the club. So I just babble on here and YouTube and Barca's Twitch channel. So we're both, I think, different dishes in the buffet of FC Barcelona, or different fish in the paella of what is FC Barcelona media. So definitely room for both the everybody in the Kool-Aid diet, if you will, Tony. So should we get to actually talking about football and the club? I think we're done with all the comida.
Yes, well, I don't know if you've ever been in Barcelona, but here in Spain, we have the lovely food. In fact, in the last time, in the last years, I think it's better to come to Barcelona to drink and to eat instead to watch football, because unfortunately, our football is not being as great as it was in the past.
I know, you're making me, those who listen to the pod know that in 2017, my wife and I went for our honeymoon. We had tons of food. Messi played fantastic against Celta de Vigo, so it was a good one. But the next time I go back, yeah, I'm hoping the football catches up to the food, because we know the food will still be good next time I return to Barcelona. But all right, let's talk about some good football, though. Let's talk about the headline maker this week, I think. Yes.
If you want to keep going with this podcast, you cannot repeat the forbidden word. That one that starts for M and at the end is an I. Okay, this is the forbidden word, M-E. SSI. We cannot pronounce this word anymore.
All right. So no more. Well, we will be talking about him a little bit later when we talk about Laporta's press conference today. But before we get to all that, let's start with as they say, Siempre Positivo. So let's start with the Positivo. The headline maker this week is Gabi, especially against Italy, that performance, with Spain. And I purposely tried to stay away from your Gabi takes, you know, on Twitter and everywhere, because I wanted to hear him here. So I'm assuming you think he's pretty good. You agree with everyone else that he's pretty good?
Yes, of course. Well, it's not what we think. It's what we have seen from him playing, as Luis Enrique said, as he was in the playground of the school, feeling no pressure, being not only great attacking and with the ball, but also without the ball. We saw against Italy like three or four tackles and defensive actions in his own box. So for me, the best point in Gavi is that he's a midfielder of the football of now. I mean, it's not enough now on being good with the ball. You need to be also good without the ball. And I think that Gavi has all these things. And of course, we saw playing against his heroes, Berratti and all these players. So as Luis Enrique said, he's the future, but also the present. And for me, since now, of course, he should be starter in Barcelona, yes?
Yeah, I mean, after the game, it was circulating that Marco Verratti was Gabi's idol. That's what people had said. And if that's the case, then Pablo Martín Páez Gaviria outplayed his idol. I think he completed, 88.7% of his passes. That number got even better the closer he got to Italy's goal. It was 92.9% completed passes in the final third, going 37 of 38 in Italy's first in Italy's half of the field. And I had also seen there was a story of him not being registered until January when he first arrived at the club. When he, this is what now going on when he was 10, 11 years old. So this is, well, I guess, yeah, only 6 years ago. So when he arrived from Real Betis, the story is that he wasn't registered in the summer. He had to wait till January, but then immediately after coming on the field, scores a goal and breaks his nose. And this is when he's 11 years old, right? That story to me indicates all of what Gabi is. Now hearing that again, and I'd seen it a few years ago, but the fact that he, when he first made his Barcelona debut as an 11-year-old, breaks his nose, scores a goal, and still wants to play the very next game, that's just what Gabi is. He has that fight and that mettle. And, you know, we talk so much, Tony, about tactics, about X's and O's, about this player needs to be here, this player needs to get into this space and yada, yada, yada. But sometimes doesn't football just come down to what team wants it more? What team has the desire? What team has the fight?
Totally agree. I definitely agree with you. In fact, nowadays, I think that there are not big difference when it comes to technical and all these things because all the teams are really prepared. So what makes the difference is two things, that desire that you mean. The first, the attitude. And the second point, the head, the mind of the players. How do you feel the pressure? How do you lead with all these things? And I think that the head of Gabi is really prepared to succeed. Of course, yes, sometimes we make always the same mistake because with 2, 3, 4, 5 big games, we are comparing them with big heroes. Yes, maybe we are going all together. We are all going too fast. But yes, his head seems to be prepared to compete with the best players in the world. Sometimes, for example, when you see a young player, he shows too much respect when he plays in front of players like Bonucci, Chiellini, but he has played as if he was 13. When he needs to make fouls, he committed fouls. I think that he committed 5, 6 fouls, and I think there were no normal fouls. They were really strong fouls. So it means that he doesn't mind who he's playing against. He's his own personality. And I think this is the most important thing to succeed at Barcelona because you are going to play in front of 99,000 person.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that in the Revista Barça, there was that image. I have a YouTube video I'm working on about everybody in that picture, about this new generation that's coming. But when it comes to Ansu, Pedri, and Gabi in particular, that trio, and then debuting with Spain, I want to, you know, bring attention to the fact that, are we rushing Gabi? Are we pushing him too far forward? Are you putting too many expectations on him, just like Pedri, just like Ansu? But the way I kind of answer that is that Ansu was the third youngest, well, at the time, he was the second youngest player to ever debut with Spain and the youngest goal scorer ever. Over the summer, Pedri started in the Euros. He was the youngest player ever to play for Spain at a major international tournament, but not just to play, but also to start. And then Gabi wasn't only the youngest player to ever make his debut for Spain, beating an 85, 87-year record. What was it, 1936? So Gabi breaks this record that's been around for 85 years. And not only does he break it, it's not a 90-minute, Yusuf Demir, when he debuted for Austria a few months ago, when he comes on in the 90th minute, you know, it's that ceremonial 16, 15, 16-year-old player who comes on for Turkey or Luxembourg or whoever it is in the 90th minute. No. Gabi started in a Nations League, not that Nations League matters, but he starts in a semifinal of this tournament that, you know, in theory matters. He's given the keys. And so as much as, you know, you don't want to throw, I think it's different between saying, hey, Ricky Puig is like Iniesta or Nico is the new Busquets. You know, no offense to those players, but Ansu, Pedri, and Gabi are on a different level. And you could say that we're not putting too many expectations on them. They're already that good, those three in particular.
Yes. And with Gabi, apart from that, you need to succeed to have a trainer that trusts you. For example, I remember that a lot of trainers, I remember Mourinho, he had one day a list of the players from the younger squad that he had created a debut for them. But it's what you say, a lot of them, they had minutes on the 90th minute, on the 93rd minute, on the 85th minute, getting in the pitch. But with Gabi, Luis Enrique said, okay, I will trust you even if you have only played 200 minutes with the first squad of Barcelona. Yes, it's not the same playing the last minutes than playing in the beginning of the game, where it's much difficult to create the spaces. So yes, of course, this is really, really, it makes the value. For me, there is one problem. What's going to happen when Pedri is back, when Dembele is back with Ansu? With Ansu, of course, no doubt he's going to be a starter. But when all these players get recovered, I want to see if Koeman keeps trusting Gavi, because I'm not sure about that.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about Koeman now. At this international break, it seems like the most outspoken culés have all come to the same conclusion that this squad, while still missing a few pieces, is better or should be better than what they've shown recently, and might do so with a different manager. I was listening to Siempre Positivo, and the three of you kind of were mentioning that, you know, going into Atletico Madrid, it always felt like Barcelona was going to lose. It felt like the comments from Koeman and the comments from players were that they weren't going to get a result, and then they didn't get that result. So just looking at the situation that you were covering in Barcelona with sources from the club about the about front, about the change of heart that Laporta seemed to have about Koeman's future, you know, I would just ask, you know, kind of where are we at this juncture? We know that Koeman is here to stay for a bit, but, you know, where are we with the decisions that he's going to have to make forward about whether the team is still missing pieces, but just knowing that the team should be better with the talent that is available, just seen by what Luis Enrique did for Spain.
It's also difficult to know to answer this question, because I think that during some moments, even Laporta didn't know where we were, because I think in some point he got lost. By now, the fact is, they have been talking with a lot of trainers. I know that we know that he's in love with German coach. And what does it mean? Of course, if you want to sign a German coach, you are not going to sign him in the middle of the season, because no chance they come now. So you have two options. If it's going to be worse and worse and worse, you are going to activate Xavi earlier than you expected. But on the other hand, I still think that Xavi is not the favorite of Laporta. So that's why they still think, okay, let's see if we can't reach the end of the season with Koeman, and then maybe we will bring a German coach. Today Laporta spoke on the radio, and when they asked to him if Koeman was going to be the manager next season, of course he tried to say, okay, no, we are now with him. Just okay, maybe it's only for now. But I don't know. My feeling is like Jordi Cruyff. Of course, he has been the most important person to convince Laporta that he needs to stay with Koeman. For example, if you take care on what we saw in Wanda Metropolitano, we saw in the box where was Koeman managing the team, because he was not on the bench. He was with Jordi Cruyff. That was not something casual. Jordi Cruyff wanted to say, okay, I'm with you and I will support you. And we know that Jordi Cruyff's advices, Laporta pays a lot of attention on what he says. And for me, yes, now Koeman said, we are going to play better. We are going to count on Agüero. We are going to count on Dembele. We are going to count on all these things. But for me, this is not the question, because it's not how many players or how good are those players that you are going to recover. The problem is the idea of Ronald Koeman. Does Laporta trust his plans, his idea of playing with three center backs? I think the answer is totally no. That's why it makes no sense on keep going with this project with Koeman.
Yeah, I think we've been really having a discussion this week that if you have three center backs, one of those center backs should probably be Frankie de Jong. He should probably be one of those three center backs, because you do run into now between Busquets and de Jong and Nico and Gabi and Pedri. And I mean, I guess I'm supposed to say Puig's name, throw him in there. And then Coutinho as well, throw his name in there, maybe in the midfield, but we've seen him playing on the forward line. It seems like at the moment, you're right, that I think I even in the previous few weeks have been kind of been on that same place with Koeman, where, you know, oh, once Dembele returns and once Aguero returns, then, you know, then Luke de Jong won't be playing anymore and you'll be in a better shape with that. But, you know, you're right that looking at Spain, I think the narrative shifted a bit with Luis Enrique. While it didn't end at Barcelona well, he's showing you that, hey, even with four or five pieces, I mean, the way that Luis Enrique Spain is the reason why I look like such a numbskull or such a, you know, such a dummy defending Eric Garcia all the time, because I look at him for Spain. I say, hey, that's what he could be for Barcelona. But Eric Garcia is not that player for Barcelona. He has a lot less confidence. He just isn't, you know, he can't do what he's supposed to do. And he's not a good player for Barcelona where he does what he does for Spain. And then, I mean, Busquets is the same way right now. You ask any Kool-Aid, Busquets is too old. He's over the hill. He's too slow. He has too many problems. And then you watch what he did against Italy for Spain. You go, why isn't that Busquets playing for Barcelona? Why isn't that Eric Garcia playing for Barcelona? Even Gabi was better for Spain than he was for Barcelona. And it's not that it was, oh, it's not that Koke is that much better in that midfield than Frankie de Jong. How is Frankie de Jong? Frankie de Jong is in theory a better player than Koke. So it has to be what's ever happening at Barcelona. I think I almost made a few too many excuses for the pieces in Dembele and Aguero that were missing. But I mean, that said, Ferran Torres and Orizabal and what was it? Pablo Sarabia, they were way better than what we've seen so far. But Memphis would be the best of those three, wouldn't he? Right. And then Ansu's now back as well. But I mean, I get that you're missing a right winger, but one position for Barcelona isn't enough to make that kind of excuse.
Yes, totally agree. I definitely agree. The problem is not Busquets, because if you create a good environment for Busquets, he can also be brilliant. And the same for other players. So that's why I say, for me, the problem is Koeman. Because the biggest question you need to do is the coach making the players better? No. For me, I don't mind if, for example, the team is not enough good, but each day is getting better and better. This is like when you are learning English or learning German. It's not important if at the beginning you are only able to say Guten Morgen. The fact is that you need to each day learn another word. And they are not getting that with Koeman. And when you see Luis Enrique's plan, you see that it doesn't depend on who plays. He has a very strong idea on what he wants, and they do that. So that's a coach. And then after that, you can be better. You can win games or you can lose games. But this the Koeman train is going nowhere. That's the biggest problem. He's not able even to know what he's going to ask for their players. Look what Busquets created the other day, playing as if he was 22, Gavi. The same with other players, making a high pressure. If you don't press together, then there are a lot of spaces. That's why Busquets seems totally lost. And another example, look where was the defense of Spain playing against Italy with 50 meters on their back. Then your team is together. Then you get the ball again earlier. You take the ball so fast, so quickly. In the other case, in Barcelona, Piqué is always getting to his own box because he doesn't feel confidence. So the team is very, very, very large. All these things, Koeman needs to see these things, but there is a problem. And this is a big problem. Is he brave enough to say, Piqué, okay, you are not going to play? No, he's not able to do that, because when he arrived, he had like a marriage, a wedding with all of them. And if you had a wedding to all of them now, you are not able to say, okay, you are going to sit on the bench.
Right. And I think I like the idea about the press. And what's interesting, and it sounds like a defense of Koeman, but it's almost what's happened with Koeman and Setien, and then before him. I mean, actually going back to the time with Luis Enrique, that this Barcelona team has not actually been a pressing side or a high pressing side in 7 or 8 years. And through what, four? I mean, you could even say Tata Martino, that Barcelona already at that point was kind of taking their foot off the gas and not pressing as much. So certainly I think that high press, that intensity, that doing something with possession, you know, Barcelona almost has to refine an identity in the post, you know, M.I, which we'll talk about in a second. So let's get into the boring stuff, Tony. Again, you are a journalist in Spain, so I do want to hear from you covering these press conferences. A few for the press conferences this week. We're going to start with the Barca CEO, Ferran Reviter, from earlier in the week. So between I saw you on Twitter about this. So between the salary limit stuff, how Barcelona's at 97, Real Madrid's at like 720 or something. And then there are the rumors about Barcelona having 20 million to spend in January, which I don't know how much credence is there to that. How do you make sense of the comments that he says and then what you see even from other journalists? And we know that whether it's Twitch or other places that not everybody is credible. The news, the outlets, you know, Noticia that's coming out of Spain, not everything is true. So how do you make sense of what's true between what Reverter said and what might be a bit of fabrication or might be, you know, a little bit of a lie?
No, the truth is this question, how bad the financial situation, how bad is that financial situation is what a lot of people is saying. For example, last week, Javier Tebas said this in the last 2 days, said that that situation is not as bad as Barcelona wants to say. And here, it is also very important to be aware of the fact that Barcelona is trying to say, okay, we have lost a big amount of money, but we will have to see which part is totally true and which not. I mean, okay, we know that Laporta has to sign the balance of the last year because the law is like this. Even if there was a change of president, you are responsible for all the year. So I think that the club is trying to say, okay, if we lost 10, the club is trying to say that they lost 20, because then if they get solutions, you get better feelings, because of course the member, oh wow, we are in risky to disappear, we are on risk to disappear as a club, maybe we are not going to be able to sign players. We don't know which exactly is the situation on Barcelona. The club says that, for example, the salaries of the players grew 60% in only 4 years, that they were all together in sometimes 30 and 40% more than other clubs like Paris Saint-Germain, Liverpool, Manchester City, that they have paid only with four players, 1,400 million euro in 4 years, only with the salaries between 2017 and 2021 of the salaries of Coutinho, Griezmann, Messi and Dembele, only during these 4 years, 1,400 million salaries during 4 years. Okay, this amount of money is incredible, a loss. This is understandable. That's why we are here.
Yeah, it does puzzle me a bit about, because now we're going to talk about Laporta and his comments today, about him, you know, trying to make the club's finances look as bad as possible so that he could be the hero that fixes everything. And the confusing thing is, even for the Athletics, Dermot Corrigan has reported about the finances, about, you know, how close Barcelona really truly is to bankruptcy. It's this weird thing where I don't know why the club needs to fudge the numbers or make it look like things are that bad financially. I think reporters like you and others have said how bad it was, and that I don't know how many socios and how many Kool-Aids at large really care about Laporta coming in and, you know, saving the club from a financial perspective. I think everybody just wants him to save the club from a sporting one. So, you know, regardless of what happened to the finances, I don't think that ever truly affects whether the socios are voting for him or whether they're, you know, a vote of no confidence or how much they believe in him. I think it always comes down to how many trophies you get, how much sporting success you have. And that's what's going to get you reelected. And that's why I'm just a little bit confused. Like, why do you need to make it look so bad when does anybody really care if you win?
The problem is that before they won the elections, they were convinced that they could build a great team. But now they have seen that there's not enough money to realize to do all what they promised. And the first point is that they won the election because they promised that with them, Lionel Messi was going to extend. This is the first point. And after that, okay, if you said that with you, Lionel Messi was going to stay and then Messi doesn't stay with you, okay, what's happening then? And apart from that, Laporta's plan that didn't exist, because before getting the keys of the club, you should have known which was the problem. And you had a lot of time to create a plan. Since from March, they won the elections till now, I think that they didn't even know what to do. Now, after 6 months, okay, maybe they are starting to have a plan. But all this homework should be done a few time ago, not now. And for me, this makes that what Victor Font said, I don't want to say that Victor Font was the best candidate, but what is the truth is that it's all unplanned with Laporta. It's just day to day, okay, what can we do? What can we do? The only one who had worked on a project was Victor Font. And now I think there is a mix of what the other board did with Bartomeu, of course, 99% guilty, mm-hmm. but also 1% of guilty or even a bit more than 1% of Laporta, that he's not been able to find answers to all these problems. Okay, you are, as you said, you are being elected not only to tell me which is the problem, you are being elected to solve the problem. So stop crying and start making decisions.
Well, yeah, it sounds like, you know, a lot of Kool-Aids have been really frustrated because of, I mean, basically mostly because of the Messi situation. And I think those that have said they don't want to be patient with Laporta or already, you know, so frustrated with him is because of what happened with the Messi debacle. And it's with his comments today that he almost was expecting Messi to play for free, which you and I both know is based on Spain's salary limits and contracts is illegal. You have to be at least 50% of what your prior contract, you know, was, which means it was impossible. We know it was impossible. Yet him saying that Messi could have played for free, I feel, Tony, like that's him. I feel like that's Laporta finally taking the loss for the situation without actually, you know, being accountable, right? That I think it's him admitting that, hey, you know, I was wrong to be so naive to say that to you, to say that he could have played for free. You think Laporta has put that whole Messi thing, or trying to put that thing behind him with the comments today? I'm not sure what to make of him.
Well, I don't know what to say. It's true that Laporta said that he expected Messi to play for free at the end, but after that, he also said that he didn't think that he could ask that to Messi. So I think that in the following days, we are going to hear Messi's version of what happened. But yes, of course, there was a big mistake of management of the situation. This is like when you are a fool playing on poker on another game. Because the biggest problem of Laporta is that he kept the whole summer saying that it was ready, it was ready, it was ready. And in fact, he didn't know if it was going to be ready or not. So I don't know how to say in English, but when you feel that something is not going properly, instead of saying the first day, okay, Leo, maybe we cannot do that, you want to avoid the issue. And at the end, it makes a big explosion. And that's what happened. And I perfectly understand that Messi says that he felt that it was a big lie, because Laporta didn't tell him that there were some problems. And at the end, when you want to do all this, in Spain, in Spanish we say malabarismos, like in the circus, when you want to keep the balance on all these things, at the end, you are not able to do that. So I perfectly understand Lionel Messi is angry with Laporta.
All right, Tony. So final question before I let you go. I think the conversation we're having over this international break, whether it was because of Gabi, different performances we've seen from Barca players, that it seems like with the financial place that Barca's in, not great. With the ideas that Koeman is putting forth, you know, at the moment, tactic-wise, not great. But what we do know is that this squad, even with or without Aguero and Dembélé, is a team that is good enough to finish in the top three in the Liga. It's a good, deep squad that should be able to, at least they have the talent on paper to turn around their fortunes in the Champions League and at least make the knockout, at least get second in the group, at least make the knockout. But there's so much work to do. So, Tony, my final question for you today is, you know, if you were the manager, what would you do with this Barcelona team? That means, I mean, what would you, you can answer this any way you want, would be, you know, what's your starting lineup going to be, or what at least idea would you try to put forth, or what changes would you make? And I mean, I don't want to lead you in at all, but you did say, and you and Sam and Rick on Sampro Positivo also spoke about Frankie de Jong's positioning, and you guys were absolutely right that having Frankie play in a ton of different spots around the field in a bunch of different positions is not really going to get the job done. So I ask you, yeah, if you were manager, what would you do to get the best out of what is a really good squad right now, I think?
Well, first of all, I think that Barcelona's squad should be able to fight for La Liga, of course. I think that if you take a look to the squad, it's not worse than, for example, Real Madrid squad. It's true that Atletico's squad is much more complete, and they have a lot of players in the bench that they can change you the game, of course. Yes, I would say that Atletico is favorite, because during 38 games, you are going to be play. You are going to have players injured and sent off and booked and all these things. But for me, you have enough team to compete to win La Liga. I'm not going to say that you're favorite, but you should reach the last three games with options of winning La Liga. This is the minimum. And of course, in the Champions League, after those these two defeats, the problem is that even if you win against Dynamo de Kiev both games, even if you do that, you don't know if you will go to the next leg, because you are in Bayern Munich hands. If Bayern Munich has a defeat against Benfica, you are going to be out. I think you are really in danger. So you depend on Bayern Munich performance against Benfica. Let's see what happens. But of course, you have to win Dynamo de Kiev both games. And of course, you have to win Benfica at home. If you do that, I think it's going to be 50-50 that you reach the next step or not. And when you ask me for the lineup, I think that you have to start betting on the future. So what does it mean? For me, you have to start giving minutes to Alejandro Balde. And I think I would say 50-50 with Jordi Alba. For me, it makes no sense playing always with Jordi Alba, even if, of course, he's a great left back, but you have to still playing with Balde, with Serginho Dest on the right side, of course. I think he needs to improve lots of things, yes, mm-hmm. but he has shown great talent, and he has shown that he can grow and improve as a Barcelona player on the right back, even if his performance have been better in the left side. But no, he has to keep learning in the right side. And for me, Araujo is a starter 100%, and the other position is between Piqué, Eric, and Lenglet. And when I say it's between all these three, is that for me, there is no a clear favorite. For me, Piqué is not at all a player that has to play in all the games. For me, Piqué is a great player, yes, but there are a lot of things that are punishing the team. So for me, it's Araujo. And depending on the game, I would say Piqué, I would say Lenglet, and I would say Eric. On the midfield, I think that, yes, you have to play with Busquets, De Jong, and let's see now Gavi and Pedri. So this is important, because you can let these players rest. This is not normal to play Frankie De Jong 50 games on a row, or Pedri, what he did last season. No, you have Gavi, you have Pedri, you have De Jong. So with all these players, you have to combine them, let them rest. This is important, for example. You have to accept that Busquets, he cannot play 5 games in 12 days. So Busquets, De Jong, Gavi, Pedri, these are great players for the midfield. You can compete with all teams with this midfield. And apart from that, I would start giving minutes to Nico. Because yes, now you can say that Gavi is better. But for me, for that position in front of the defense, for me, Nico is going to give Barcelona lots of good performances. And attacking, Ansu Fati for me needs to play. Memphis for me needs to play as a number 9, even if he's not the classical striker. I definitely wouldn't play as a starter with Agüero or Braithwaite, because I think that they are good options for the second half, but not as starters. And I think that you have to play 100% with Dembélé, even if Dembélé needs to improve and he has done lots of mistakes when he plays, and sometimes he doesn't read the game properly. But Barcelona's squad has a big problem. It's all the players want the ball in his foot. And nowadays, you need to be dangerous with balls into the space at the back of the other team. Because if you don't do that, the other team is going to play together, because they don't have fear that you are going to attack their back. So that's why, for me, it's very important, Dembélé. You can make a long pass to him and he's going to be very fast and he's going to create a lot of chances. So yes, for me, the attack line should be Dembele, Memphis, and Ansu.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of getting to the same place when Dembele comes back, the same, again, the same rotation, the same everything. But all right, I think that'll do it, Tony. I said exactly the amount of time I took for me is the time that you gave me. So I really appreciate that. So if you're listening to this show because you listen to Siempre Positivo, please follow us, the Barcelona Podcast, on Twitter and IG at the Barcelona Pod. And if you're just getting familiar with their show, make sure you follow Siempre Positivo wherever you're listening to this, as well as Tony Jean-Marty and Sam Marsden and Rick Sharma. But if you're following me and know who I am, you probably know who those three are. So we also, both us and them, also have Patreon. So check us both out on Patreon as well. But most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barca.